No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Together with my co-host, Maria Sanchez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So call in and be part of the conversation at 888-627-6008. Or you can Skype questions to BBSRADIOPR. Here we are, the day before Veterans Day. Maria, how are you?
I'm fabulous, Michael. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. So let's start by wishing happy birthday to the Marine Corps. The Marine
Yay.
Corps today is 244 years old. And you know, the most amazing thing about this, Maria, is that they started on November 10th, 1775. That's before the country was founded.
Amazing.
The country wasn't founded until 1776. So they've been defending America since before there's been an America. So God bless every Marine that's out there. Happy birthday, and to all our servicemen and women across America, happy Veterans Day. On to the great news in D.C. statehood. Got to toot my own horn a little bit here.
Okay.
Ron Wyden, Senator from Oregon, is a co-sponsor of the bill, and that means that in the last month, we've gotten two new co-signers, both of whom I lobbied to get on the bill.
Nice.
So we thank Senator Wyden for being on the bill, and also Senator Feinstein, both who were lobbied by me and the people in my office, and we're glad. Welcome aboard. It's great to have you. And today we're going to have a couple of veterans. We're going to start with a great guy named Matt Carey, who's the Executive Director of Veterans and Military Families for Progress. He was the former director of the mayor's office on veterans affairs. He's got a lot more accolades that we'll go into as we start interviewing him. But we're great to have him. We're thankful to have him with us today. Matt, welcome and happy Veterans Day.
Well, thank you, Senator. I appreciate the opportunity to appear on the program with both of you.
Yeah, and we're so happy to have you. And can we just start, Matt, by you telling us exactly what Veterans and Military Families for Progress, what they are and what they do, and talk about some of the issues that they're concerned about.
I'd be glad to. We were actually formed in 2004. After the election, presidential election, after John Kerry's loss, a number of us are Vietnam veterans who wanted to continue the fight for the issues that the senator had promoted. So we formed in Milwaukee in 2005. Our goal was threefold, to educate the American people on all the veteran issues, the coming home veteran issues for the vets and their families, to advocate for legislation in Congress and at the state local level that will assist our veterans in the transition from active military to veteran life. And thirdly, to educate the media on the issues that are most important, which are the coming home issues for our veterans.
What do you mean by coming home issues, specifically for our listeners? Because I know we generalize about, say, PTSD, or if they have huge physical injuries to deal with, their rehabilitation and then reintroduction. What do you mean by those words?
Well, obviously, traumatic brain injury and post-traumatic stress are critical issues that need to be dealt with, from what has happened to them in war zones to actually adjusting to civilian life. In addition, is job placement, education of our veterans when they come home so they can get a good job and make that transition to civilian life. And also their health care, making sure that they've registered with the VA for their health care and that they take advantage of the new CHOICE program, which allows them to get the primary care appointments with doctors in regular hospitals around the country. So those are primarily.
Nice.
And also for the families, to help them adjust to the soldier coming home and the children. And also to attempt to find caregivers for those vets that have been impacted by TBI and post-traumatic stress.
And are there psychosocial services offered too?
There are. There's been more of that, I would say, in the last 6 to 8 years that has developed, both during the Obama administration and beginning of the Trump administration. So those services are available at state and local levels with nonprofit organizations that have stepped up to get involved with these issues.
Let me ask you, Matt, let me ask you a political question. I also worked on John Kerry's campaign. I actually organized people on Indian reservations in Minnesota. Many Native Americans are, as you probably know, veterans. But we had a hard time getting veterans involved in politics. Do you find that? What do you do to motivate them to get involved? And it's a nasty business. I mean, John Kerry is a great example. We both remember how he was trashed by because he protested the war, even though he was a distinguished service member and had been awarded three Purple Hearts. I've never even heard of anybody else awarded three Purple Hearts, but you know, it's a really tough business. What do you do to get veterans involved?
There's several ways that we reach out through the veteran service organizations that they join. For example, VoteVet.org, Wounded Warriors, and Paul Rykoff's organization are the more modern 21st century Iraq-Afghanistan VSOs. And then they have the traditional ones like the Legion and VFW and Vietnam Vets of America that try to do a good job in contacting these vets when they come home to get them involved in the political arena, either to run for public office at the federal, state, and local level, or to at least advocate on the issues and educate the elected officials on the issues that are most important to veterans and their families. So
and
there's
do you
a lot of that.
I'm sorry, Matt. I didn't mean to cut you off. Do you find that you're getting veterans who actually want to run for public office? Because this is a problem with Native Americans. They don't, you know, they have a hard time stepping out front, and they're very reserved people, and they have a hard time getting people to run for public office.
That is an excellent question, Senator. With the Native American community, since the beginning of all of our wars, Native Americans have fought on the side of U.S. government against any enemy that's foreign and domestic that has attacked us. Believe it or not, over 20% of the male population of the Native American community have served in the military, where approximately 12% of the rest of our population had served previously. So they have certainly stepped up and tried to do everything. One of their problems is they don't have a national veterans service organization. A lot of their activities for veterans are local on the reservations. This has created a problem for them with their disability claims with the VA and to get other services from the VA. So there are various groups out there trying to educate them to get into the game. There's a law firm in Maryland called Bergman & Moore that does a great job of reaching out to these Native American tribes, try to help them get their disability claims approved by the VA. Veterans and Military Families for Progress has been working with the National Indian Gaming Association and the National Congress of American Indians to get them involved at the national level to form a veteran service organization and to work closely with the other VSOs. So the issue is being seriously looked at the federal, state, local level by various groups. The problem is getting the Congress to focus on it and also to get the executive branch to focus on it.
Have you made progress? Do you see that there's some change in the movement, or at least the understanding that this is a challenge and it needs to be addressed and as quickly as possible, I would think?
We have a series of what they call quarterly veteran service organization and military service organization sessions, which has been promoted and hosted by Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi and the Chairman of the House Veterans Affairs Committee Mark Ticano. And they have done a good job of at least listening and hearing to these issues affecting Native Americans and trying to get legislation introduced and passed both in the House and over in the Senate to address those issues. So they are on the radar. It's now getting a question of getting the Native American community to be more involved with their own advocacy on this.
Well, let me ask you, when you interact with Congress, Matt, because I noticed from reading your background that you've done this on many different levels for many years. When I was in college, a very long time ago, the majority of members of Congress were veterans. The majority of people that served in the United States Congress were veterans. Now it's less than 17%.
Wow.
Of the members of Congress are veterans.
Talk about a seismic shift.
Yeah. So do you see that? Have you seen it? Has it gotten tougher to deal with these people because they're to deal with Congress because they're not in, you know, they don't understand the issues as well as they did many years ago when the majority were veterans?
Again, Michael, that's a real good question. Yes, the answer is yes, it is more difficult because those 17% have to be the ones that are advocating and prioritizing the issues for our veteran community. There isn't a problem when it gets to war policy and national security. It seems like all the members of Congress are on board on those issues. But when it comes to these coming home issues, and I'll enunciate a good number of them, we've been running into problems where we hear the language of, oh, we support our veterans, but when it comes time to approving the legislation and approving the money to deal with these issues, i.e. mental health for TBI and PTS, they tend to fall short in their support. So it is a problem, and it's challenging because of the lower numbers of congressional reps that have served in the military.
Which is even more incentive to recruit from within, I would think, to say
absolutely.
You once had a sympathetic audience in elected positions, and it's difficult to say that 17% doesn't mean that the rest don't have sympathy or empathy, but if you walk the walk and talk the talk, who can speak better for you and your brothers and sisters than someone like you who's been in the trenches and knows exactly what it feels like firsthand?
I agree with that, and that's why we need to get more vets and or military family people elected to public office at federal, mm-hmm. state, and local, so they can educate, mm-hmm. the other representatives on these issues.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. You know, that's what we say when we train people that want to run, is that if you're not at the table, you don't get fed. So I think that it's great work you're doing to try to get veterans elected. But let's talk about some of the other things you've done that I find very interesting, Matt, here locally in D.C. Matt was the director of the D.C. Office of Veterans Affairs under Mayor Gray. And I know you started a furniture donation program for veterans. And, you know, this is something that I don't think most people would think of, that returning vets need stuff like, you know, not only housing, but they need stuff to go into housing. So talk about that for a minute, because I know it was very successful.
Yeah, that program was established under the national concept that President Obama and General Shinseki put in place to address veteran homelessness around the country. And we found in the District of Columbia, we have about a 30 to 40,000 veteran population. But a good number of them served in the military and the Marines and Army at the E1 through E5 levels. So coming back, especially during the Vietnam War, the safety net broke with families to take care of these veterans. And they tended to fall into the homeless category and also chronic homelessness. So I wanted to attack this issue with Mayor Gray, and I said, we're going to have to go at this several ways. One was we needed to get a program in place to provide them transitional and permanent housing, and that was put in place with the HUD VASH voucher program, which still exists at the present time, where each state and locality got a certain number of these HUD VASH vouchers that would assist these veterans to get off the street, off the grates, and get into temporary and then hopefully permanent housing. However, since they had been homeless for so long, they didn't really have any other material things. There was no furniture and storage or anything. So I went to Fort Myer and Fort McNair, and they were doing some of their BRAC-based clothing stuff. And I said, what are you going to do with the furniture? And they said, oh, we'll probably give this to the GSA. It'll be put in storage. I said, well, we could use it in the District of Columbia for this HUD VASH voucher program. They said, okay, fine. You send the trucks and laborers over to pick it up. We'll help load it for you, and you can have it. So they gave me almost $2 million worth of free furniture.
Wow.
Beds, refrigerators, electronic goods, et cetera, that they were going to put in storage or get rid of. And so we had this available in a storehouse that Mayor Gray helped me get, a $1 a year storage fee. Out in Laurel, Maryland, and I set it up like a military supply room, and I had everything labeled and put in various categories. I also got Tempur-Pedic Mattress Company to donate 500 brand new mattresses for our veterans, since they had nothing to sleep on. I then got the Teamsters Union to deliver the furniture every Saturday for 4 years, free of charge with the truck and driver. And we had veterans volunteer on these trucks to unload it. So we were able to service about 500 to 700 D.C. veterans and their families. Really, there weren't that many families. Most of these guys didn't have spouses or partners. And so it was working quite well. And we also established a couple other programs around this, which is financial planning and management. They didn't have a lot of money, so they wanted a job where they could get paid for in cash, like taxi cab driver or something along that line. So we set up those programs with the D.C. Taxi Commission to hire these veterans as sort of ambassadors for the city. And then we also had a Christmas program mostly centered around the Iraq-Afghanistan families coming home that were in need. For their children, for clothing and toys and whatever, and that, the hall was donated by the AFL-CIO on 16th Street. And even the mayor showed up one time in a Santa Claus outfit and gave out the gifts to these kids. So these programs can be done. It's sort of creative financing. We didn't use, Michael, any D.C. taxpayer money for this particular program or for the financial planning or the Christmas program centered around homelessness and our veterans and their families. So,
did you have any outreach from other communities? Because it sounds like you could have been a pilot program. It's brilliantly successful. There's only winners in the equation here.
Well, thank you for bringing that up. I actually introduced this to the I was a member of the National Association of State Directors of Veterans Affairs, NASVA, and I introduced this as a best practice program. And that did get picked up by some other states and localities. Their problem was, you know, transportation. How do I get the furniture to where the veteran's going to be placed? So they had to set up different kinds of things as they didn't have the local Teamsters union that I had lined up to do this for us. So some of them were able to implement it quite well, and others are still attempting to do it.
Well, and let me ask you, Matt, you were a Vietnam-era veteran. What are we seeing with Iraqi and Afghanistani veterans coming back? What are we seeing that we didn't see with Vietnam veterans? Is there any, has there been any change in what military people need when they return to regular civilian life? Has there been a change?
Well, a couple of positives, and then I'll give you the negatives. The positives are that there seems to be right now a better, I would not call it a seamless transition where you heard that rhetoric floating around D.C. for a while. It's not seamless, certainly.
Yeah.
But, by any stretch.
There are more people involved in the care of veterans coming out of the nonprofit community than existed during the Vietnam campaign. There's also a little bit more friendly attitude at the VA and other federal agencies towards the Iraq-Afghanistan vets. As you know, it's a volunteer military, and so they tend to be able to access some of the services a little quicker and better than back in the days of the Vietnam War. However, and also Vietnam vets have stepped up to help the Iraq-Afghanistan veterans because they realize what they're going through in these limited military action wars, that a lot of the people don't understand whether we're winning or losing or what's going on. And, you know, they just they need to know what's going on with our veterans. So the negatives are out there, though, because with the Iraq-Afghanistan vet, they've had multiple deployments, 3, 4, and 5 times into the war zones. The Vietnam conflicts, there was a draft, and so you would probably get assigned a tour duty one time in Vietnam. Some people re-upped for a second tour, and others decided to do it themselves. But in the case of Iraq-Afghanistan, the military really owns you with this volunteer military, and even if you come back and you lose arms or legs, they still won't release you if they still have some use for you in the military. So these are some of the challenges that we're dealing with. The second most one that I have recognized is mental health. With that many deployments and the problems of traumatic brain injury, those that aren't familiar with that, it can affect a lot of things in the brain, both mentally. Physically, you can lose your taste, your smell, your hearing, your speech. It's devastating. And the PTS part is the mental just trauma of coming back from a war zone and trying to make the transition back to civilian life. So those are the kinds of things that are going on. And some other things you need to know about is Agent Orange obviously was a big detriment during the Vietnam campaign because of the side effects that it brought about, and they're showing up later on, 25 years later, with a lot of the Vietnam vets coming in for help. It took 25 years for Congress to complete a study on Agent Orange and finally have legislation introduced and passed to provide financial resources to those Vietnam vets. The other issue for Iraq-Afghanistan is called depleted uranium issues, and this comes when an explosive IED device goes off, penetrates your skin, gets into your bloodstream. It can cause circulatory and cancer-related issues. So Congress is now studying this issue, but, I mean, they better not wait too long because you're going to have these same problems for the Iraq-Afghanistan vet as you had with the Vietnam and Agent Orange. And we need to really focus on these two things better than what we're doing.
Well, you know, that's amazing, given the fact that every time they want to raise their salary, it only takes 6 months to decide to do that. Uh-huh. But you know, Matt, thank you so much. Give us your website. First of all, let me tell you that I think that a homeless veteran ought to be an oxymoron. There should be no such thing as a homeless veteran. And so thank you so much for all the work that you've done with homeless veterans. You know, I encourage all our listeners out there, call your member of Congress and say, stand up for veterans, because they've stood up for you.
Absolutely.
And tomorrow's an absolutely great day to do it. I don't know if Congress probably takes off on Veterans Day, so if you can't do it when they come back to town, but make sure you do it. Because it's important. And Mac, do you have a website or something we can give our listeners if they want more information?
VMFP, it's www.vmfp.org. Veterans Military Families for Progress.
Nice.
Okay.
Thank you so much. You were so articulate, and thank you for describing all of the maladies that our veterans are encountering, because the average person doesn't know what it is, TBI and PTSD and all of that, and you were really beautiful with the descriptions. Thank you.
Well, thank you for having me, and I just want to make one other item clear.
Sure.
Called caregivers. That's a great way that the general population can help out with the Iraq-Afghanistan vets, is to volunteer and learn how to become a good caregiver for them, because it's extremely difficult for the families to deal with these issues. So,
well, that's great information, Matt. Is there a way that people can interface with caregivers? Is there a website for them, or how do they
reach out? There's another organization I can give you that I sit on the board. It's called Coalition to Salute America's Heroes. The executive director is David Walker, and that website is Coalition to Salute America's Heroes.org.
Well, Matt Carey, thank you so much for being on our show. Thank you for your service to America. Thank you for your continued service to veterans and to the people of the District of Columbia. And I hope you have the happiest Veterans Day. I know you're in Florida. I hope you're relaxing. And I hope to see you again
soon. And celebrated.
Soon. Yes. And we'll have you back on the show.
The program. I hope you will continue to talk about these issues, because we need to educate the media and the American population on this.
We absolutely will. Thank you, Matt. Happy Veterans Day.
Bye-bye.
Thank you very both. Right.
Bye.
Thank you.
Well, after Matt, we also have Hector Rodriguez. Hector is an old friend of mine as well, and he's created a group called Veterans United for DC Statehood. He's got much experience in government. He was actually had a staff position at the White House at one time. He's a Washingtonian who was a captain during the Vietnam War. And like I say, he's been a consultant to the federal government at many different levels. And now he started an organization called Veterans United for DC Statehood. And he's going to talk to us about some of the issues that he's involved in and about a big rally that he's putting on tomorrow. And we hope we can get all DC citizens out to support veterans and to support the idea of statehood. Hector, are you with us?
I am with you 100%.
That's thanks. A truth, yes.
And we're with you 100%, which is yes. Which is important. So first, Hector, thanks for being on the show. First, tell us about the event tomorrow so we can get people there. Tell us what's going on tomorrow.
Okay, first let me thank you, Mike and Maria, for really giving everybody, you know, a report on the veterans and Veterans Day and for sticking by us and having our backs. This Veterans Day rally for DC statehood has two goals. One is to, of course, rally our veterans on a very important subject, our political freedom in this country. And secondly, to recognize veterans that live in DC. There are 30,000 veterans that currently live in Washington, D.C., and we want to do some things with them, for them, and we are engaging every organization so that we can have a Veterans Day for statehood. We are going to celebrate, by the way, the City Council just passed a resolution unanimously to establish D.C. Veterans Day, which was never established. So that's
yay.
One of the products. Yes, that's one of the products of our organization. Let me tell you about what we're doing then on the 11th. The first thing that we're doing is we're going to have veterans speak about some of their experiences, speak about why they support, statehood for Washington, D.C., and their concerns that for 200 years, our residents in the District of Columbia have not had a representation in Congress, and the veterans at this point refuse to accept that situation. And this generation is coming together to unite veterans, not only in D.C., but around the country to change that situation in the Congress. So on the 11th, we're going to have some speakers. Congresswoman Eleanor Holmes Norton is going to be one of our keynote speakers. She will be addressing statehood and, the situation where it is now and the congressional delegations and how they're supporting us. She will also be receiving an award from the veterans for her untiring devotion and actually being an incredible veteran herself in nice. This fight. And so she'll be receiving the D.C. Veteran Statehood Freedom Award. Tomorrow, other speaker is Elliot Domingo. He's heading the Mayor's Office of Veterans Affairs. And, of course, the illustrious Mike Brown will also be addressing
come on.
Us. We really appreciate the work that Mike Brown has done for us and given nice. Us always his support for the veterans. And, of course, I will be presenting along with some of our veteran leaders, awards to four distinguished veterans who has been engaged in D.C. statehood. So I want to emphasize that Veterans United for D.C. Statehood is a veterans civil rights organization. We are not a political organization. We are citizens of the United States who are looking for redress from our government for an injustice that has been imposed upon us for so many years.
Well, you know, I have to say, Hector, that of all the things that bother me about not having statehood, or not having equal rights, this is the thing that bothers me most, that we have 30,000 brave men and women who have stood up for America that live in the District of Columbia now that do not have the same rights as every other American. We've also had 200,000 people from the District of Columbia serve, and more than 2,000 have made the ultimate sacrifice. You know that in Vietnam, during the Vietnam War, and I'm sure you're aware of this, Hector, the District of Columbia had the highest casualty rate. We had more casualties per capita for veterans coming out of the District of Columbia than any other jurisdiction. So really? We've not only, yes, and we've not only served, we've just served with distinction. People like Hector Rodriguez and others have served this country with great distinction, and it's absolutely a stain on our democracy that these brave men and women do not have the same rights as everybody else. So thank you for doing this, Hector. Maria, well, I'm sure you have a question.
Sure.
Hey, well, Hector, first of all, your passion is palpable. I just love how you speak with authority and redress, and, of course, the illustrious Senator Michael D. Brown.
Oh, come on.
But what, I'm serious. But what do you see as the most salient challenges now, like the top three, and has that changed from, say, 10 years ago?
I think one of the biggest challenges is that the American people do not know that people in the District of Columbia, including 30,000 veterans, do not have their freedom. This is a challenge to us, and so we're utilizing our veteran channels to bring this to the ears of America. So this is, to us, a call to freedom. And this is why we launched D.C. Veterans for D.C. Statehood on May 25th, 2017. And the next challenge is to get our veterans in the Congress to understand that they have their freedom that they fought for, but we don't. So we are engaging the veterans in the Congress of the United States not only to understand, but to fight for us. We're also nice. Organizing state veterans organizations in support of our movement. So we are actually a national movement. And I want to say to you, Maria, that a challenge to us, another challenge is that people look at us as a political organization. We're a civil rights organization addressing our government to seek redress for injustice that has been imposed upon us. And we're fighting not only for our rights, but for the rights of 700,000 American citizens. We refuse the current condition, and we will resist in every way that we can to get our rights established and restored. Now, statehood is a pathway for us. It's a pathway for our freedom. We have tried everything else, but statehood is to us a blessing, and over 80% of our people that voted on the resolution voted in favor of statehood, so the veterans are going with the people of the District of Columbia on this.
Well, nice. And that's what veterans have always done, right? They've always stood up for what's right, and so we're so happy to have them involved, because you know what, when I go up to Capitol Hill and I have veterans with me, there's a completely different tone than when I go up by myself, because it's really, really hard to tell. So, well, it's hard to tell a man or a woman that's taking up arms to protect our democracy that they shouldn't be treated like everybody else. It's something that's very, very hard for the members of Congress to do. So veterans are extremely effective lobbyists on this issue. So we're so glad to have, the veterans involved and to have Hector, organizing them and getting them involved. Really appreciate it. Let me ask you, Hector, since you've been involved in so many Latino organizations in Washington and with Latino veterans, are there special challenges that they face? You know, we've just seen this decorated veteran with a Purple Heart testify before Congress, and we see Congress giving him certain members of Congress trying to trash him because he was born in the Ukraine. And I forget how old he was when he came here, but he was a child. And, you know, I found my personal experience with people in ethnic communities is that they're among the most patriotic Americans that there are. So please tell me, Hector, do they face, I know you're from Puerto Rico and Puerto Ricans are American citizens, but other Latinos, are there certain challenges that you guys face as veterans?
There are challenges that they face, and sometimes there are those that don't want to deal with the fact that, you know, there are Latinos that have fought for this country. And as a matter of fact, in the Civil War, Latinos fought in the Civil War. You will see their names on our Civil War memorial. And there was a colonel that held off when all the other officers were killed in one battle. It was a Latino colonel that held off, and he wrote a book on the brave American civil rights soldiers that fought from our city. So, yeah, Latinos are continuing to fight. Quite a large percentage of Latinos are entering the armed forces and putting their lives forward in behalf of this country. I'll say this to you, Mike, on September 8th, we stormed the Congress, as they say in the military, and visited over 61 veterans and Democrats to support our cause. Some of the people that went with us, for example, Mr. Ramirez, who's on our committee, and some other Latinos are part of the our movement. We have also, of course, women veterans are an important part of our organization, and we have a Purple Heart winner, as a matter of fact, woman in our organization that's playing an important role. So we are engaging the Congress, and particularly looking at the veterans to rally with us, and we are preparing for our next move, and that is the Senate of the United States. So they have a veterans council in the Congress, and we want to engage them in a roundtable to discuss our issue. And again, one of the disadvantages, and Maria asked earlier about this, is that they want to put us as a political organization and deter veterans from fighting for their civil rights because maybe they belong to a 501c3 organization. And so what they're doing is they are politicizing our issue. And, you know, our forefathers were not perfect. No human is. And so they looked, they overlooked, for example, that we had slavery when we conceived this country. They overlooked that women could not vote when we conceived this country. And they overlooked that we could not vote in the District of Columbia. And I say to you that that decision for people not to vote in the District of Columbia was strictly a management decision. It was not a fundamental constitutional decision. And so therefore, we've got to correct some things. We corrected slavery. We corrected the fact that women can now vote. And now we've got to correct this this injustice. And I say to America, America, tear down this wall of infamy that keeps the people of the District of Columbia almost as political slaves and not allowed to vote in the Congress of the United States. I think it was a Republican that said, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall. Well, I'm saying to my Republican friends, tear down this wall and allow us to participate in our democracy.
So, yeah. Hector, you mentioned when you lobbied that you lobbied 61 Democrats. Does that make it political, not in the organization, but within the desire to do what
it
is that you're...
If you notice, I didn't use the word lobby. What we did was we educated them about, you know, our veterans and our needs. And so I would not, I don't use the term lobby. I'll let lobbyists do that. We are civil rights, veterans civil rights organization seeking redress for a injustice that has been done to us and the people of the District of Columbia. And what's happening is that some sectors want to keep us out because they fear that maybe a few Democrats will be elected to the Congress. And I say to that sector, if you support us, we'll support you, but do something to support us, and let's start with our civil rights. Let's start with our freedom.
But are Republicans not interested in having the conversation?
Well, if you want to talk about Republicans, traditionally the Republicans have voted against our cause in the Congress of the United States. And we want to have a serious word with the Republican veterans as to why we cannot have our freedom just like they have theirs.
Well, and you know what? It really, as you know, Maria, has become a partisan issue.
Right.
That's really the thing. They don't want two more Democratic senators. But I've got to tell you that I've talked to Republican veterans who stand up and say, they're against statehood. And then when you sit down with them and you say, look, there are 30,000 people in the District of Columbia who have stood up for America and fought for America and deserve to be equal citizens. Every one of them says, yes, you're right. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you how many of them have changed their mind when you really explain the issue to them, because, it's pretty basic. You fight for America, you deserve to be a full-fledged American citizen, regardless of the partisanship.
Right.
Involved. And let me also say, earlier, I talked about how we have so many casualties during the Vietnam War. Puerto Rico also has a movement for statehood. They also serve America at higher than the national average. They during wartime, they serve at much higher than the national average. So veterans are always there for us.
My uncle was my role model to become a veteran. Actually, when I was a kid, I saw his picture. He was in Korea, and he was next to a tank with his .45, and I was very admiring. And he was so proud that he was a sergeant in the combat engineers, and he was so proud when I became a captain in the military. You couldn't believe how proud he was. But
I bet.
Yeah, my brother. My two brothers and I also served during the Vietnam conflict. We were all in uniform. At this very moment, my brother's doing an activity for Veterans Day in Florida. And so, we're all engaged, but the key is for the American people to help us break down this wall that exists. And this is a wall that is seen by the world all over, and is a stain on our democracy. And so we veterans who have been on the in the killing fields of war, and we came back and we didn't have our rights. And so it's important for us, and it's a rallying point for us, that we are not just fighting for our own right, but for the right of the people of the District of Columbia who deserve to be represented in the Congress. I don't see how any red-blooded American who signed an oath to be an American could not understand our right to be represented in the Congress of the United States.
Yeah, it really is our strongest hand, because veterans are so important to America. And I think it's just terrible that we talk the talk when it comes to veterans, and many times we don't walk the walk. And, you know, we really need to do it on this issue. And I'm not sanctimonious about this. I'm not saying that if Washington, D.C. was solidly Republican, that there wouldn't be Democrats against it. But we need to get above the partisanship, because yes, this is more important. Can I ask you a personal question, Hector? Sure. I saw that you graduated from Kent State University. Were you there in April 1969 when they had the shooting? Or, I'm sorry, May 1970?
In May 1970, I was in uniform serving my country. And so I probably would have been one of the ones that probably would have gotten shot. But I was in uniform on active duty in the military when that happened. Unfortunately, that happened.
Yeah.
And I was very, very hurt to see. Matter of fact, one of the things that they did was they burnt our barracks down that we used to train in. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. But
yeah,
I'm interested in getting as many Americans to understand that us veterans have awakened, and we are that we are fighting for D.C. voting rights in the Congress, and that statehood is our pathway to our freedom, and we want them to understand that we will resist and we will no longer tolerate our status.
Well, Hector Rodriguez, thank you. We're running out of time here. So, Maria, do you have any more questions for Hector?
I just
hope I can be as passionate tomorrow when I speak as you are, Hector. Go ahead, Maria. I'm sorry.
Hector, do you have support from American veterans that are outside the District of Columbia, and does that help you with momentum and awareness and education?
We are creating that movement. Right now we have a state coordinator in New Jersey, and we have, of course, in Virginia, a state coordinator. We're working on one in Maryland. So we have one of our veterans that's coordinating. His name is Kyle Smith, and he's coordinating our state organizations to bring in those veterans. And the other thing we're looking at is, you know, some of the veterans organizations like Veterans for Foreign Wars and all the those types of organizations, you know, they're national. So we're looking to unite our efforts nationally with those veterans organizations to support us in Washington, D.C. You know, today I was looking at the football a little bit, and the owner of the Steelers is a veteran, and he made an announcement about veterans and that he owns the Steelers. Guess who's going to get a call tomorrow?
Good.
All right.
That's
Hector,
the kind of that, you know, we are scoping very clearly and looking for support from us. We're looking at the baseball team who we support. We got 30,000 veterans that love baseball, and we're looking for, you know, for people to love us back and for people to help fight for our freedom, just like we put our lives on the line and fought for their freedom. And one of the things, Mike and Maria, and I don't want to take any more time, is this. What is so outstanding about our veterans? What is so incredible about our veterans is that in spite of the fact that they don't have their freedom, they're still responding to America's call to fight for them in the killing fields of war. They're still serving our country, and I want America to note that.
Well, I can't think of a better way to end this. Hector Rodriguez, thank you for all you do. I will see you tomorrow on Freedom Plaza.
Mañana.
And I hope we'll see everybody else. And before I let Maria say goodbye, I just want to say that we're going to play a song tonight that goes out to all veterans in America. Thank you for your service, Matt Carey. Thank you for your service, Hector Rodriguez. Happy birthday, Marine Corps. And this is Lee Greenwood with God Bless the USA. Maria, you want to say goodbye?
Always to thank our listeners for making the time to take us into your lives on a weekly basis. And thank you for everyone who has served, my dad in the Korean War. My brother is a captain in the Marine Corps. And all the other folks, men and women, and the families, we're very grateful. We wouldn't be this country without you.
That's right.
Give the people their right to vote.